Hello, everyone. I'm Liz.
I'm Liz.
And I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'll just start with some of my background. I was born and raised in Walnut Creek, born in this hospital. And I kind of grew up in a Leave It to Beaver kind of family. My dad was a Harley Davidson mechanic. I can remember as a kid, he would drive home on a Harley and we would hear the rumble coming up the street from, there was like a park way down the street and we could hear the Harley coming from way down there. And my brother and I, we would yell, "Dad's home!" And we would run out to the garage and wait for him to pull in. And then he would come in and he'd greet us, and then he'd come in the house and he'd give my mom a kiss every night. My mom was a nurse when I was born. She worked here at this hospital. And then I was in daycare for a little bit after I was born, and my daycare provider told her, "Oh, you should have seen what Liz did today." And she said, "You're right, I should have." So she quit her job and she became a stay-at-home mom. She was there every single day for us after school, except for one day of my elementary childhood and even into high school. I remember it was a very exciting experience because she wasn't going to be home, so I got to take the school bus for the first time. The only time I ever got to take, well, besides field trips, I got to take the school bus to Ryan's house after school so his mom could keep an eye on me. That was pretty fun. I have one brother. He's 2 years younger than me. Right now, he lives down by San Diego. In my household growing up, we had alcohol that was sort of gifted to my dad through like customers. If he did a job for them, sometimes people would give him a bottle of wine or something. And that bottle of wine went in a cabinet in a corner and pretty much never got drank. It usually after a year or two would just get poured down the drain because my parents have never been drinkers. Well, sometimes my mom drinks a glass of wine now. And she becomes a little bit funny. Don't tell her. Okay. From age 17 through 26, I had some times of experimenting with drinking and other things. But I stopped in 1999, and I decided I probably have had enough for a lifetime. So I've been clean and sober since then. I had a boyfriend from age 23 to age 39. It was a very long relationship. And then we decided to get married. But 1 week before, he was also clean and sober. But 1 week before we got married, he came in. I was in the kitchen and I was doing the dishes. I'll never forget. My hands were completely sudsy. He came in and stood behind me and said, "I just need you to know I drink beer," just like that. And I was like, frozen. We've been clean and sober for over 17 years, and he drinks beer. No, it wasn't 17 years. You can do the math. The beer became $500 a week at BevMo, and then it became anything anyone would give him, and then anything he could find to take. So 1 year after being married, I found myself at the Wednesday nude meeting at the Brentwood Al-Anon meeting in complete despair. I heard a story at my first meeting that made me think that I needed to protect myself. It had to do with a DUI accident and losing everything. So I felt that I needed to protect myself. So after my first meeting, I went the next day and I filed for divorce, and that was the fastest thing I've ever done in Al-Anon. Everything, if you've been here for a while, you know Al-Anon usually works really slow. It was a very hasty decision, and but while it was hasty, I now believe that God's timing has been in every step of my in my life, that because while it was a very hasty decision to get married, divorced that fast, if I hadn't had the paperwork filed, I would have been held liable for his DUI accident that soon came after that, which I was served a a summons for $4 million, and that's a lot of zeros. Okay. So I gave my husband chances. The divorce, I didn't want to get divorced right away, even though I filed. I gave him chances. He told me things were going to get better, but they really didn't. I wrote him letters with ultimatums, telling him how I felt and that I couldn't live like this, that he needed to go to a program. 12-step, I knew NA and AA worked. It worked earlier. I gave him ultimatums, and I was patient. I was working the steps in Al-Anon, and in my fourth step, I figured out that I don't have anger, which is great for my job because I teach middle school. I didn't lose my temper with him. I gave him plenty of chances, but nothing seemed to work. My parents offered to send him to any program he wanted to go to, but he didn't want to do any of that. So I finalized the divorce in 2015. I let him stay, but he mostly lived in the garage. Things were still really bad. There was not just alcohol involved. He stayed in the garage, and this is like a car garage, like not a man cave garage. And he would be sleeping on the cement, you know, the gray cement floor. Even through the winter, wouldn't come in the house, even though I begged him to come in. He started bringing other people home, like homeless people that didn't have a place to live either, and mostly addicts. I started to try to set boundaries. I had a couple of sponsors earlier that talked to me about boundaries, and I set this boundary that everyone thought was very extremely reasonable, that all these people had to leave by 2 o'clock in the morning. But they just didn't seem to get the idea. I put an alarm clock out there and I would set it every night before I go to bed. But I would wake up and go try to ask them to leave, but it was a very difficult chore. My boundaries were not respected. So one night, this was going on for quite a while, and one night I went out there and I said, "You guys, I've been telling you for how long that you have to leave at 2 a.m. And my husband, or maybe ex-husband by that time, said, "Things aren't going to change until push comes to shove." And I said, "Okay." And I went back in the house, and the next day I called my lawyer. And we filed eviction papers, and I served him the eviction papers. I evicted him on October 2017. I just want to say that my divorce, I've been so extremely blessed in everything. I cannot even tell you. I mean, while living with someone who's using is extremely difficult. My husband was completely amicable due to the divorce. We had never merged finances, so we had never put each other's names on any of the vehicles. We'd never had children, so there was no need to mix all of that stuff. So when he agreed to get a divorce, my lawyer just drafted up a postnuptial agreement and said that your stuff is your stuff and her stuff is her stuff. And because I put the down payment on the house and I was then paying the mortgage, he agreed to let me have the title to the house. When I evicted him, I think he became willing to believe in a higher power, but I'm not really sure about that because I kept asking him, "Do you know where you're going to go? Do you know where you're going to go?" "No, something will come up. Something will come up." But nothing ever did. So I evicted him and he had to leave in October of 2017. He became homeless then. And that's when I really realized that I had a problem. I knew there was a problem, but mostly I thought it was his problem. I came to Al-Anon and I was kind of working on myself, but I was really working hard with my sponsor through all of this to get the courage to change. But when I finally evicted him, I realized how addicted I was to him. And I sort of went into like a withdrawals, I think, that like a almost kind of like a detox, I don't know, with anxiety and worry about him because now he was homeless. I couldn't keep an eye on him, that sort of stuff. That it was much harder that month of October when I evicted him. So we were still on good terms. I used to go to a park in Concord, and I would visit him once a month. We didn't have children together, but we had dogs together. And so once a month, I would bring the dogs to the park, and we would hang out. And I wouldn't have any time limit. We'd just stay for a few hours at the park and hang out. And everything seemed to be as well as it was when he was living in the garage. I was giving him the wrong impression. I was letting him believe that there might be a chance that we would get back together. And that was the wrong impression because we weren't going to get back together. And he sent me an email one day that was kind of led me to believe that I was giving him the wrong impression. And so I responded to the email that and let him know we weren't getting back together. And I haven't spoken to him since that. That was in May 2018, almost a year ago. So now that I've been working this program, I see I have patterns of behavior throughout my whole life. When I was a little kid, not little kid, when I was probably in middle school, my friends and I think my friends followed me. I think I was the crazy one. I would chase after boys, and now looking back, I really feel like a stalker. I have this trunk. I don't know if any, like they used to call it a hope chest, I think. I have this trunk, and I have to destroy some evidence in there. There's a photo album, I think, in there. I haven't looked in there for a while. But of a boy that was, I think he was a freshman at this private school I went to. And the school went from kindergarten to 12th grade. And I remember like pretending I was this stealth detective or something and taking pictures of him because I had a crush on him. And I have a photo album of this guy. And I would like, so this was a pattern of behavior for me. It wasn't just one guy either. So, but that was the youngest, I can remember doing this. I also like to chase after my own wants. I think I get like fixed on something and then I'll chase after it until I get it. And then I know I was I would chase, not exactly physically chase, but like mentally chase my husband. My husband was always, I was always kind of down on the list of things to do with, and I would always like put Sunday aside to spend time with him, but that never came true. You know, we didn't actually always spend Sundays together. And now that I'm on my own, I've three of our dogs have passed since he left, and I'm down to one dog, and now I'm chasing after finding a new dog. And so I'm trying to put that off for a while. I'm trying to love on the one dog I have. Another pattern of behavior that I've had since I was a little kid is sweeping things under the rug. I learned this from my family. If you don't see it, it doesn't really exist. And so I can just remember things just being swept under the rug. Don't talk about it. This is something I'm working on. Another pattern of behavior is I would make a game out of checking up on my alcoholic. I don't know if any of you had that issue, but it became a real game to me. It was like I like doing puzzles, but this was like a more active puzzle because I have to find the key first. There's a key to a cabinet that was called the medicine cabinet. And if I could find the key, then I could figure out what was in the cabinet. And it was like right after he would leave the house, I'd go into the garage and I'd be like, where's the key? And he's really good at hiding the key, but I would pretty much find the key pretty quick. It would always be in different places. And then find out what did he take so that I could determine what I could expect when he was coming home. So one of the hardest patterns of behavior that I have that I've been working on is not believing that I was enough. And I wasn't good enough. I always believed I wasn't good enough to be married. So it took 17 years to get married. Not good enough to get him to stop drinking. Not good enough to keep his attention. But now I know better. I'm good enough. I'm good enough for me. I'm good enough for my dog. And I'm good enough for my God. And that's really all that matters. Thank you. A few weeks ago when I was at a meeting, I heard this read, I think it's in our beginning, or maybe it's in our closing. Without such spiritual help, living with an alcoholic is too much for us. Through my journey, I was waiting for attention. I'll never forget, every evening I would be sitting on the couch waiting for my husband to come home, just waiting every night for him to come home. And I felt like I became like a puppy. You know, you leave your dog at home and they're just waiting. They can't wait for you to get home. And they're like wagging. And once they get home, they wag even harder. And then the door would open and he would actually greet the dogs and not me. And then he would go to the garage and say, I gotta go. Somebody's waiting on the driveway. And I would get passed up for somebody that was waiting to use with him. And that kind of hurt, because one time he said, well, if you would use with me, we could hang out together. And that just was not going to happen. That was not an option. Living with my addict was very difficult because I was watching someone kill themselves. And going out and finding my husband on the cement and wondering if he's even alive and having to check for a pulse was really difficult. And watching him stay up for 6 days at a time and be standing in the garage and just like he'd just do this thing over and over. And I say, why don't you come in and go to sleep? Oh, no, I'm not tired, you know, and it just watching that. And then he'd actually fall down, and sometimes he'd hit his head on the he had this metal, heavy duty metal workbench. And he would hit himself on the workbench and just stay on the floor. It was very difficult to watch. Another thing that was really difficult was that he was giving his time and affection to other people. There was a homeless guy that started coming around a lot. He did not live in my garage. I made sure that he could not be a squatter. But he was there pretty often. And I think my husband liked to give him attention because he was kind of like a little brother to him, and they sort of had things in common. Whereas at the time we didn't have a lot in common except for our dwelling place, because I wasn't using. And then another thing is I found this journal, and I found out that my husband was, he could have been an ex-husband by that time, but I was still trying to give him a chance. I found this journal, and in the journal he professed his love for this younger woman. And when I read that, I was like, I kind of knew who the woman was, and all I could think of was, oh good, now he can leave with her and they can live happily ever after. But it didn't work out that way. Through my journey, I became aware that I was addicted to my addict, and I would get a fix by going to see him. And when I didn't see him, I'd go through withdrawals, and I would go visit him, and I'd be good for a couple weeks. If I got an email from him, I would get sick. I would, like, physically get sick. I would get upset stomach, like I was going to vomit, and then have other issues, and I would get cold sweats. And I believe that we're here because we have become addicted to our qualifiers. And then my life started to change. When I got busy with Al-Anon, I started to get better. That's like called a book, but I never read that book. But I like the title. So after I came to Al-Anon, after about a year and a half, or really quickly, actually, I became my group sponsor. I really needed to be, not sponsor, I'm sorry, secretary, my group secretary. And I needed to be the secretary because I needed to kind of have accountability for my attendance. So I became a secretary and I really enjoyed doing that. And then after a year and a half, I was privileged to become the group rep for my group. And I got to be involved with the lending library, and I briefly served as an Alateen sponsor. We were trying to open an Alateen meeting in Brentwood. I got the book, The Courage to Change, and I read it daily, and then I began to believe that I did have the courage to change. I pray a lot. I give my will to my God, and I serve at a place called the Community Outreach Center in Antioch, and I'm called a dinner friend. This is like the best job for me ever because I get to eat and talk. So I go every week and I eat and talk with the homeless and the people that have low income and need some food in Antioch. So one way that I've gotten through my journey is I have a really great group of six friends. My friends really rallied around me. I don't know if they talked to each other while I wasn't there, but they would tell me what I had to do. Like, I have a friend named Kathleen, and she would insist that I came to her house every Sunday night for dinner. That was like a dream for me that my family did that, but we aren't really that kind of family. We kind of are a busy family, I guess, because we don't get together like that. But she insisted every Sunday I had to go to her house for dinner. I could not be alone, which was really important because Sunday is really the lonely day, the day that I always waited to spend time with him. And so I wasn't just sitting at home pining over him being gone. I got to spend my Sunday evenings with my friend Kathleen. I have a friend named Ellen, and she made sure that I would get out and come walk my dog with her dog. And every few days, we would get together and we would go out, and she would listen to me. And she's not an Al-Anon, so she must be an angel, because I can only imagine somebody that doesn't really understand us listening to me anyway. Sorry, I don't mean to mean you. Now these days, I make sure my calendar is full. I text my group of six friends all together and say, who wants to do this? Who wants to go walk around the reservoir? Who wants to come over for dinner? All these things. One of the most important parts of my journey is I got a sponsor. I've had a few sponsors, and I'm grateful to all of them. But my most recent sponsor has been really hardcore, and she's been really honest with me. There have been times, she reminded me the other day, that there have been times where I just said, I hate dealing with you, or something like that. And I hated facing all the facts that I had to face. And I hated some of her advice sometimes. And I didn't want to do these things. But we would meet every week. And sometimes, she's such a good sponsor, she would meet. I wanted to meet at the park because I like to be outside. And we would meet at a picnic bench at the park, and she would tell me these terrible things I didn't want to hear. And but she was so honest. It was like the truth. But I would go home and I would think about what she'd say, and it would kind of wear on me, and I'd realize she's telling the truth. I'm going to have to do these things. And I started working my program harder, and I started getting things done. And she's the one that really helped me get the courage to change. She's the one that made me realize the difference between fantasy and reality. And if your sponsor hasn't talked to you about that, maybe they should talk. Or maybe if you're a sponsor, fantasy versus reality. I still have issues with that. I called my sponsor a lot, and I should probably pay her for her time. Oh my gosh. When I was going through it, I was calling her like 8 times a day. And she would like be there for me all the time, like 6 o'clock a.m. and up to 10 o'clock at night. But don't get me wrong, she would call me too. In fact, there was one night we were on the phone. I think it was the night my husband got evicted. And we were on the phone. It was really late. I was really scared. There was a little threat before he left. And so I was really afraid to sleep in the bedroom because that was the farthest place from any exits. So I slept in the living room for like 3 weeks because you had the front door and the back door, you know. But the first night we were on the phone, it was really late. It was like 11 or 11:30. I think I was on vacation. I was on my October vacation. And I said, listen, it's like 12 o'clock or something. I don't remember. It was like after 11:30, I think. And I said, I got to go take my dogs out. It's time. I got to go take the dogs out. And then she said, well, I'll call you back in a few minutes. I said, okay. So I went out there and my ex really hadn't left. He'd come back. And he was like in the side of the front of the house. He wasn't behind the fence or anything. And it took me a little while to get back into the house to get to my phone. And my sponsor called while I was out there. And I don't like my phone, so I don't carry it with me everywhere. It was on the counter. And I didn't come back in to get the phone when she called. So she called the sheriff's department. And so then when I did go back in, the phone was lit up, you know, and I answered the phone and she said, oh, you're okay. And I said, yeah, he's out there, like being out in the front yard, you know. And she goes, oh, you're okay. I have to go. I have to hang up with you. The sheriff's on their way to your house. And I said, oh, good. That's great news. Because I needed some help escorting him away. He wasn't supposed to be there. And I didn't want to really be mean at that point. You know what I mean? And so I think that was sort of a God thing. It wasn't really her thing. She was worried about me. I also kept my business to a small group of people. I didn't share my business with my family because my family doesn't understand Al-Anon. And I didn't explain my situations to a lot of people because they don't understand. And a lot of people, when they find out what you're going through, they say things like, oh, I wouldn't put up with that. I heard that once from a very close friend. And I thought, well, you don't know what I'm going through. And I love my husband more than anything, you know. But then I had to start loving myself as much as I loved him. I decided to start making boundaries for myself, and because nobody else was listening to my boundaries. So I came up with this boundary that I wasn't going to make any decisions for 24 hours. I would come up with something, and then, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I want to just jump on things like respond, react. I decided no making decisions for 24 hours. And it really got me to start meditating and praying and relying on my higher power. It drove a lot of people crazy because people want a response. And it kind of became fun to me to say, well, I can't tell you until tomorrow. When I don't react for 24 hours, I feel like my decisions are much more sound. And I really feel like things are not as important as my serenity. And so I still try to keep to that, even though it's been over a year that, really, when I evicted my husband, I really found out how crazy I was, not how crazy he is. Today, I still miss the relationship I had with my boyfriend before we got married. We were like rock climbing and doing all this stuff together before we got married, and after the drinking started, that's when things didn't happen so well. I have to fight the temptation every day to check up on him. That's don't check up on your alcoholic. That's the don't that I have the hardest time with, and it's been a year since I've even seen him or talked to him. I don't hold any resentments for him, but I pray for him every day that God's will be done for him, and hopefully that he's doing better. I find things to do every day that I enjoy, like going for walks with my friends, taking my dog for a walk, dancing to music in my living room, and doing puzzles. And I taught myself to learn to crochet through YouTube. So, and then my new friend Carol is teaching herself too. I'm grateful to be in a better place, and I have a lot more serenity than I have anxiety these days. And I know that I'm enough. That's a really big thing for me, is that I know that I'm enough. I'm really grateful for the Al-Anon program, and that I met some amazing people through working with the district, through coming to these meetings, through my Antioch Wednesday night group and my Friday night Brentwood group. People that have just been there for me and just understood me. People that I don't see very often have made such a giant impression on me and just made me feel like people understand us. My plans for the future. My friends talked me into becoming a docent for the Black Diamond Mines, so I did that last summer, and I really plan to get really involved with the East Bay Regional Parks. Like I said, I'm volunteering with the Community Outreach Center, which makes me feel really good. I'm making my house my own by like painting it and doing a little fixing things, redecorating and cleaning things out. And my most recent thing is I have not yet made the decision. I haven't registered for school yet, but I'm thinking of going back to school just for the fun of it, because at this point, I don't really care what grades I get. I just want to go to have fun. So I'm going to continue to work this Al-Anon program and work with my sponsor as long as she'll have me. And I'll continue to be a sponsor myself and hopefully even become a better sponsor. This program is priceless. And I just want to thank everyone for coming tonight to listen to Scott and myself. So thank you.